Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Today, we're talking NXT for August the 9th, 2022. I liked this episode quite a bit. Looked at some takes on Twitter afterwards, and man, it's all over the place. And people even saying whatever they're doing in Raw and SmackDown, fixing that didn't... apparently, they're not doing it here. And people, I saw a couple people calling this directionless, which is so strange to me, because I saw a lot of things this week that are clearly headed in directions. But maybe we'll talk about that, and maybe I'm just feeling good because I was just in the mood, and my whole last week has been very positive, folks. I might just be a happy dude. Anyway, let's talk main event. Zoe Stark versus Cora Jade. With Mandy Rose on commentary, they used the first 2 minutes-ish of the match to push, to basically just put over Mandy, not talk too much about the match during the feeling out process. And then I kind of liked the way they went, where after the split screen break, they come back and Rose has gone quiet because she really, really wants Zoe Stark to be softened up before their match next week. So yeah, Cora Jade providing a realistic challenge for Zoe Stark, but not losing a lot here because she did get distracted, because that's what we do in wrestling. Roxanne Perez provides the distraction by stealing Cora Jade's cane, stick, whatever it is. And Zoe wins in 11:06 with dope finisher. So we have our number one contender wins. Love it, folks. Like it. And so next week at Heat Wave, we do have this match that, and I thought this, the less is more thing with Mandy Rose as the thing went on, as the match went on, was very positive. Also, her really selling the idea that she doesn't want to face a Zoe Stark that isn't softened up. So this worked for me fairly well. The match, good in a lot of places. A couple of times it seemed like the very powerful Zoe Stark forgot how small Cora Jade is on those release Germans. Really did look like she maybe hurt her, could have hurt her on a couple of those throws. 2 suplexes in a row, weird landings that you're not expecting from Cora. And maybe it just looked that way to us, but at least on the first one, the announcers, no, I think on both, the announcers called out those landings, but it would seem nothing went awry because the match went off and they finished it and everything, folks. So there you go. Zoe Stark, number one contender. Does she finally end the endless reign of Mandy Rose next week? Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. For this match, I just dog on her a lot, so it might seem like I'm just hating on her, but Cora Jade did not look good, even in the earlier parts of the match before those Germans. It just, she didn't seem to remember where she needed to be, and it seemed like she was going through the motions in her head of sequences. And it just... you said in the report she didn't have good footwork. She definitely did not have good footwork in the match tonight. And I just, the more and more I watch her, I just, the more and more I feel like my initial thoughts about her and her push being too much and not matching her skill level, both, you know, in the ring and on the mic, I just feel reinforced in my original opinion of that. And it, that's unfortunate for her because I would have hoped at this point that there'd be more improvement. But Zoe Stark, once again, looked good. Her finisher is really, really smooth, really fluid, and it looks like it would hurt. She did what she could with this match, and I like that they made it so that she looked strong over the Weasley champ at the end, knowing that the attack was going to come from behind and laying Mandy Rose out, because too many times we see the heel do that when we know it's going to come. And it makes the baby face look dumb. I think nothing hurts pro wrestling more than stupid baby faces. So I like that at this point you need to have Zoe Stark over, because Yeah, I just don't know what else is left in the Mandy Rose title reign. And I guess we can discuss that a little more when we get into Toxic Attraction's been there a little later too. But I feel like if you don't put Zoe Stark over here, then we're just going to be running through the motions again. And I don't think that you need to have that with NXT right now. And let's not forget, Mandy Rose being NXT's Women's Champion, that was a Vince McMahon decision. Triple H is back in charge. And when Triple H was in charge of NXT, he didn't put Mandy Rose in very prominent positions. And I think even though she's improved, I think she's shown why that most of us never thought of her as highly as Vince McMahon. So I'm seeing Zoe Stark taking the title next week at Heatwave and going from there.
Yeah, I think she will take it. And it seemed very auspicious, this Zoe Stark, Nikita Lyons tag team as mm-hmm. part of the main roster tournament. I would say that I think it's probably, and maybe this is just too obvious to even say aloud, but I think that's to promote Stark and Lyons in the next Lyons as the first big challenge
right.
for Stark for the championship. So you had said putting them together is doing Zoe Stark dirty, but I think putting them together and then having Lyons be the first, like, to be in that prominent storyline, that's really doing us, the fans, dirty.
Well, here's why I think it's doing Zoe Stark dirty, too. So when I saw the bracket last night, I wasn't watching Raw. I just saw it on Twitter, and then I was like, oh, no. It's not directly analogous situations, but it really felt to me like Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa being called up in the midst of their blood feud as a tag team on Raw and SmackDown, along with Aleister Black and Ricochet. It just, again, they're not feuding for those different circumstances, but I just don't see the purpose. You could have had any of the other already formed tag teams in NXT be in that tournament. You could have put Toxic Attraction in that spot if you wanted, but you put these two, and for me, Zoe Stark is much better than Nikita Lyons. And sure, Lyons has improved, but I just think that what they're doing, pairing those two together, at least they made note of it on the show tonight. So they're maintaining some continuity there. I just feel like it's doing Zoe Stark's more of a burden than it is a favor.
Yes, indeed. You can call us 515-605-9345. No one's done that. They've called. There's people listening. But there is nobody looking to be on the show in the moment, which is a rarity. But you know what? I'll take it now and then. You can also email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Nate, who are you, and what did you think of the main event?
So they tell me I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter, Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys if you want to check it out. So I kind of echo a lot of what you guys have already talked about with the main event. I still don't feel like Cora Jade's ready for prime time. I like the character switch to, you know, to a heel in terms of like her promo work. I think the black kind of does work for her. I know that's kind of a stereotypical like heel thing, but I think it does work for her character, her gimmick.
They did it to Roxanne Perez tonight too.
Well, yeah, actually, yeah, you know what? That's right. That's true. But still, you know, so I do like the character changes, but it, like her in-ring work still needs some polishing. She's not terrible. That's for sure. But you know, some mistiming, you know, like you're saying with her footwork, things like that. Yes, certainly noticeable. Zoe Stark. So going in the heat wave, I'm kind of torn right now because of that whole caveat of them being in Zoe Stark and Nikita Lyons being in the tag team tournament for the WWE tag team titles. My guess is they're not going to win them, and it's kind of just like a space filler for that tournament. But you know, who knows? I mean, it could certainly be an imminent call up, you know, for two of them, or for one of them, or something like that. So I'm kind of, I don't know. I almost kind of want to see what happens on Monday. But I'm at this point in time anyway, I am still leaning towards Zoe Stark winning. If this whole thing with the tag team tournament on Raw and SmackDown did not actually occur and pan out, I'd still be leaning towards Zoe Stark. So I'm going to do that right now. I'm a little bit less sure because of the tournament, but not by much. But yeah, like I said, not too much more to add on what happened in the main event.
So this match, that's definitely going to be on Raw, this match, this tag match.
You know, actually, I don't know that for a fact.
I think they only announced the one next week with that wasn't with these two. Okay. The one they set up last night. Why am I forgetting who they set it up last night with? Someone got hurt or someone got attacked and they set it up for next week. But yeah, I don't think they announced.
There were one or two Dusty Classics where there were matches where they weren't sure they wanted to put them on TV. So they were like on the YouTube channel or whatever. There was one tournament that was very large, 16 teams, I think. And they just had a lot of that stuff happen off of TV or at house shows. And then they just talked about it. So, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like if you're a Lions fan, do you want her on Raw already? It's just, I feel like that does her dirty, supposing that she's got a lot of work. That entrance, I cannot believe that entrance has not been tweaked. It's so silly. The attire is horrifying. And the finisher doesn't look like it hurts. It's
also
the double whammy. It doesn't look
like
it hurts.
All match.
Right, right. And she sold it while the work was being done on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But then, yes, she didn't sell it when she started using it for attacks. And I'm like, no, you got to either use the other leg. Yeah. There's a level of intelligence you need to do that kind of selling. And well, let's move on. So let's go to, we're there. Nikita Lyons versus Kiana James. This was 4-11. As stated, it was mistake-free, which that doesn't sound like high praise, but both of these women have been in matches that mostly were not. And it kind of came together. It just 4 minutes and 11 seconds. They're not asking these two to do a lot. Nikita has already won more matches at the beginning of her NXT career than almost everybody ever, because she is 7-0 televised as a singles on this show. So very rare that they go this hard with somebody. And so such a strange choice, but that is what they're doing. And this match came together okay. I think James and her gimmick are just so ham-fisted. It does not look like it belongs in this era. It really has to be pulled back kind of a lot to work better. But yes, I you know what? Mistake free. Is there anything? I can't pile on anything more than that. Bruce?
I wouldn't say it was quite mistake free. There was that very, 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 very bad corner cannonball spot from Lyons that she tried and then couldn't pull herself quite up and then tried again and kept, and then took her a while to pull herself up. So I wouldn't say it was quite mistake free. That was a very glaring, what do I say? So I noted in our chat that I think that in the first hour to me, there were a noticeable, at least four or five noticeable kind of sloppy moments. And they're all little things like that corner cannonball or Trick Williams throwing punches like a fifth grade bully on the playground. So here I wouldn't say it was mistake free, but it wasn't the second Nikita Lyons Lash Legend match. So that is, again, not a high bar, but something that, again, not mistake free, but still passable. And then I will say, regardless of what you may feel about the post-match attack, Kiana James with that turn face to me.
Yes, indeed. I saw you type that tweet, and I was well in favor.
Whoa, you saw me type the tweet out? Dang, you must. How?
Don't look out your window, pal. Okay, Nate, go ahead. Or don't. I mean, you know.
Shoot himself.
No, the mute button was the death of me again. So I was just dealing with something with my dog. We're talking about Keanu James and Nikita Lyons, correct?
Correct.
Okay. We are.
Just
we just make sure. Think we'd say.
Okay. So. I was listening, but I was also cleaning up dog puke. I think he's fine. He just seems to eat part of a toy. Yeah. Anyway. He'll be fine. I didn't think this was necessarily a terrible match. You know, like, I mean, Bruce definitely just brought up, you know, that corner spot where Nikita Lyons tried to get like that flippy splash thing going on, and it didn't quite work. That was really like the biggest botch kind of that I saw. I get it. I kind of got to give it to Nikita Lyons a little bit. I feel like she stepped up a little bit this week personally. Didn't quite notice as many of the flubs and kind of things that we've been talking about with their character. I still don't necessarily like the tire and things like that, but it really just kind of reminds me of like Nia Jax type of a deal. But I don't know. I just don't feel like it works for her. Some people do. I think probably a majority of people do, but I don't personally like it. That's neither here nor there. Keanu James rather. I feel like this is probably a bit of a push for her. She seemed to, you know, obviously turn heel towards the end here, hitting Nikita Lyons with that leather bag full of God knows what. I'm kind of glad to see that too, and see some of these newer girls that haven't quite gotten. I wouldn't say they haven't gotten TV time. They've gotten a lot of TV time, but they also really haven't gotten like solid, concrete characters. We've seen a little bit of character development, you know, with Keanu James and things like that. Don't get me wrong, but we haven't really seen like that kind of that next gear, if you will, for a lot of the talent. Still a lot of the undercard talent, you know, NXT 2.0, that NXT 2.0 class. So kind of happy to see that she's getting some more TV time, some push, and kind of get some edge with this character. So, overall, you know, not bad. I can't believe I'm saying that about a Nikita Lyons match.
While we're on the topic of Booty Giuliani, I think the overarching kind of question we haven't discussed, not just with her, but with everyone else, is, especially in 2.0, is how much does Triple H actually like them? Because, especially in the women's division, more of these 2.0 acts were Vince and Bruce. So, not me, but Pritchard. So, what does having Triple H in charge now entail for them? Obviously, they see something in her. Triple H does, if he's putting her in the tag team with Zoe Stark on Raw and SmackDown. But maybe that's also the test to see if she'll sink or swim on the national televised product that has a lot more viewers than on Tuesday nights. I think that question should probably, undergird every kind of discussion we have regarding talent moving forward for the next 2 or 3 months.
And I think we're going to see that as we kind of get through the cycle of this PLE light. Coming out of that, we're probably going to see a lot more about who he values, where I feel like we're seeing a little of it. Like Triple H, it would seem, is in favor of Cameron Grimes heel. Because he's going back heel and he was already doing like plenty of the leaning into his tougher edge. But it seems like Cameron Grimes heel is either coming soon or it's going to be just a complete swing, or he'll just start taking swings at Gacy. I don't know what to expect there, but we'll
that'll make him a face.
Oh yeah, that'll be big time baby face stuff. So, the Gacy, for all that NXT is doing right now, Gacy being leading this faction when he's only capable of the matches he is, and then talking for a better talker. I don't get why this is happening. I don't understand it, but whatever. We don't have to linger on that because there wasn't a lot of that today. Let's go to your mid-show main event, Apollo Crews versus Roderick Strong. One of the best matches on NXT 2.0 ever. 15 minutes and 27 seconds. Crews goes over Strong with, I don't know, dope finisher. I don't remember the name of his finisher.
It was a one-arm spine buster, if I remember correctly.
Yes. Yes, it sure was. Does it have a name? I don't know. But he did it. So Crews wins that. Before this, we did get a scene with Diamond Mine where he took Diamond Mine to task for they took him to task for not being in the tag team match, and he said it was a test and you passed. And afterwards, he demands to know why they weren't there, and Brutus just smiles and goes, it was a test and you passed. And it was my favorite Brutus moment ever. And they just had a laugh at him. And the Creeds and Kemp were all – they found something on the video. Julius did. He's the smart one, gang. He found something on the video that he wanted to run back. And he said, if I saw what I think I did, then I'm going to have words with somebody. So Apollo Crews, your seer of NXT, knew that something was going to happen at that eight-man. And apparently it did. Also, does Ivy Nile still exist? Do we know? They didn't mention her. There was an opening like who wasn't there, and they didn't mention Ivy Nile. And then Ivy Nile wasn't in the room either time. So I don't know if they're scaling her back until they can get some. I mean, there's a lot of work to do on the mic. She can be the kind of wrestler who never talks. But right now, when she talks, and it's not just she has a mousy voice. There's nothing they can do about that. But her delivery is just mind-numbingly dead. I don't know. It's not even like an active. She's not even just making the wrong acting choices. She's just making none. She's just sounds like she's looking at a textbook. I don't know. How else to say it? She's obviously got work to do there. But in the meantime, I will miss her in the ring because I love, love, love watching her tear fools apart. So there you go. Your mid-show main event, Apollo Crews and Roderick Strong. Nate.
So I agree. This is absolutely fantastic match. And you know, there was obviously a lot of story and things kind of went into this match, both with Apollo Crews and with Roderick Strong and Diamond Mine. You didn't bring up, and I'm really, really curious about, is Apollo Crews during his entrance. Like they show him backstage, almost like Goldberg walking through the hallways. And all of a sudden it like zooms into his eyeball and everything goes green and you see a ring with all the members of Diamond Mine, all the male members of Diamond Mine, like lying in the ring, kind of just like, you know, look like they just got their ass kicked. And then it like zooms back out and he finishes his entrance. And it was like that same style that vignette that happened like 2 months ago, where he was supposedly like this vigilante type of a deal. It's kind of like, it was very similar to that, had the same color scheme and everything. I don't know what that is. I'm sure it's some sort of like a, foreshadowing of the, you know, collapse of Diamond Mine, because we've been, you know, obviously they've been foreshadowing that for a long time, but what the heck is that all about? Like, is Apollo Crews now not a Nigerian prince, but he's got some like ESP or something? Like, I don't know what's going on here. Really weird. But, you know, overall, like the match itself was great. I did like the backstage interaction afterwards with with Roderick Strong and the Creeds. It's again, just further plays into, you know, everything that's going on with them and kind of the demise of Diamond Mine. So that's kind of that's what I got for that.
Bruce.
So I will say the initial backstage segment where they were looking at video with Apollo Crews, I thought that Julius regressed a bit on the mic. But then he caught it back when Roderick Strong came back into the picture at the second backstage segment where he noted the thing on the video. So there was a little bit of hit and miss there for me with Julius. But Brutus was good. I think his facial expression when he said "you passed" was the icing on the cake to that. It was just perfect. So with Ivy Nile, I know they've really been having the storyline with her and Tatum Paxley come more into the forefront. And I believe I saw that over the weekend she was injured. Tatum Paxley was injured. So I wonder if that's why Ivy Nile wasn't on tonight, which, I mean, it still doesn't make sense because she's been an integral part of trying to keep Diamond Mine together. So that'd be a reason why she's not there. But they, again, not having any mention of her is a bit odd. So I think Apollo Crews, that vignette or whatever that video is supposed to be with the diamond, with Diamond Mine laying in the ring hurt in that weird green light, maybe he's supposed to be either like have a dual personality, and one of them comes out and is like Agent 47 and gets her to everybody. Or if you don't know Agent 47, I'm talking about Hitman, the video game series. Or
code on the back of his neck.
Yep. Terrible movie back in the day. So the other option is that he's actually been planning to do this to Diamond Mine since he came to NXT, or at least in the past few weeks since he started associating with them. The only issue there is if it does happen, we need to hear from him what the motivation was for him to not only target Diamond Mine, but then to try and implode Diamond Mine. And I think they are laying the groundwork for that. It seems like he's trying to be that person that says, oh, that drops the little hints, a little insidious things that stick in the back of the minds of the Creed and Kemp and possibly Nile that make them kind of implode on each other. And I don't know if it's for a ploy to take control of Diamond Mine or to weaken some of his competitors or what, but I think the key here is going to be hearing from Apollo Crews eventually, and hopefully it's the week after whatever happens, what his motivations were for doing what he did to Diamond Mine.
Okay. There's one other long match on this, technically. Wes Lee versus Trick Williams, 12:42, counting your 20-second rest periods between. I think they did a pretty good job of saying how this match went. The only thing weird about it was they were wearing boxing gloves in the beginning, which is not what they do in this rounds matches. Anyway, six rounds, a minute and a half long, or is it 3 minutes long? 3 minutes long? I don't know. I remember. 3 minutes long, and if you win a fall in there, you get a point, and when you get 2 points, it's over, even if there are rounds left to go. Wes Lee defeats Trick Williams. Trick, of course, gets the first fall by cheating a little bit. And then Wes Lee comes back and wins two falls. Even after a cheap shot with a loaded glove by Trick while they were in a rest period in full view of the referee. it should have been a disqualification. Like, it should have been. It worked in setting up the finish of the match. That part of it worked. But it was in full view, like not even attempt to hide from the referee. So why was it let go? Anyway, decent stuff considering. The boxing sure doesn't thrill me, but the other stuff was pretty fine. They didn't linger here. They just did this, and they got out. Wesley goes over Trick 2-1, Bruce.
So I noted in my report before, and I said it on here, but I watched through the USA Network player, and for some reason when you watch through there, they don't give you the split screen breaks. Instead you get full screen commercials. So I missed the entire third round of this British rounds match. Now I don't mind these types of matches. I'm someone who, and still, you know, consumes combat sports. I remember Impact kind of having their own variation with the Grand Championship five, six years ago, which didn't last very long, but it had rounds and points and everything. They even had judges, I believe, which goes more towards the MMA side of it. But I think So this was another one of those things where I said it was kind of sloppy. You know, the punches from Trick were pretty bad. Very loopy, very just telegraphed, and the pin that Wesley had for his first fall, Trick had his leg on the rope, but then visibly pulled it back, so his leg wasn't on the rope to break the pin, so that Wesley could get the victory there, or at least the score. And then when Wesley went to go put the glove on for the final fall, he couldn't get the glove on all the way, and he punched Trick Williams basically with just a flailing glove and not his fist with the power behind it. So just a little couple of things that were noticeably sloppy, but that's also because I was attention to, you know, trying to look at these things. Beyond that, though, I think they've done a really good job in building this, not just the Wesley singles run, but his feud with Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, specifically with Williams the past month or so. The boxing glove thing, I think, was set up by Trick using it to knock Lee out the other week when he was in the crowd. So maybe that's why they have the boxing gloves there. It still is weird because in the second round, they just got rid of their gloves and went straight to doing some wrestling moves. But beyond that, I think the eventual Wesley Carmelo Hayes North American Championship match is going to be one of the better matches of the year on NXT. So I'm looking forward to that.
Nate. Well, they brought the boxing gloves out because Trick Williams had boxing experience. He was like touting that past few weeks, during the feud with Wesley. So the whole boxing aspect of it, I think, does make sense. It did seem weird all of a sudden, though. Like the, you know, first round, it's like, hey, we're boxing, and then the second round, it's like, all right, boxing gloves off, let's go back to wrestling now. You know, thought that was a little bit weird. Okay, so when they first announced this, I was kind of intrigued by it. When the bell rang, still intrigued by it. I was wondering if it was going to be like some sort of a boxing wrestling hybrid type of a deal. Like, you know, I didn't realize that the first round was going to be fake boxing, and then the rest of them were going to be, you know, good wrestling. It was weird. I got to give them credit for trying something different, trying something new. I thought it was kind of fun, you know. Overall, it was a lot of fun. I liked the presentation of it. You know, they showed, you know, each guy's stats right before the match, the way they went over the rules and everything right beforehand, the fact that they started with mouth guards and boxing gloves. It gave it a bit of a different feel. I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing. I'm still kind of torn on it. Cause like I said, I give him credit for trying something new. I just don't know if this necessarily landed. At least the concept of the match anyway, if that necessarily like landed or not. The match itself, I mean, I enjoyed it. I'm glad I watched it and that it happened, but, the rules were, the rules were obviously outlined and clear and stuff, but it just seemed, I don't know, it just seemed weird. I thought there was going to be like more boxing involved. However, in a way, I guess I'm kind of glad there wasn't more boxing involved, because if the first round was anything to go by, if you guys have ever watched professional boxing, in boxing, they hit the shit out of each other. And you can't really work that, you know? So it really just looked like they were a lot of worked punches. The punches that did land were, you're very soft. You can kind of tell, especially if you were, you know, if you've watched boxing. I'm not a huge boxing guy, a combat sports guy. But I mean, you know, I've seen clips of Muhammad Ali. I've seen clips of Mike Tyson, Holyfield. And like, it's kind of tough to say like, all right, that was real boxing. But besides the point, I think they did pretty well with what they had. And, you know, it's kind of still got me invested in the feud. I am definitely invested in Wesley's story. And, you know, as you guys know, when he was part of tag team, you know, really didn't care about him or the tag team. But this whole story that they've got him on, they've got me hook, line, and sinker. I'm really rooting for him. It was kind of a cool underdog story, watching him build himself back up, still in the process of it. So, really curious to see where this goes. I'd love to see him maybe get the North American title around his waist. But I don't think it's time for Melo to give it up just yet.
So I just realized something.
Yeah.
This British rounds match goes in line with the reports that they're bringing more UK talent over, and we see that with the UK tag team titles being on Briggs and Jensen.
Oh yeah.
But also they mentioned that I think the Heritage Cup right now is being held, and it was won in a rounds match by Joe Coffey. And there's a report that says that Gallus, which includes Joe Coffey, will be making their way over to NXT stateside. So that could be a little, you know, Vic briefly mentioned Joe Coffey. So that could be a little way of at least trying to familiarize the viewing audience who doesn't watch UK to understand who this is coming in when they do make their debut, presumably either next week after some kind of match as an interference or the week after to set up the next sort of, if not era, then at least the next phase of NXT.
And Coffey could always Wesley as his first opponent and be like, you're playing in my sandbox? Give me a break. And beat him in a rounds match and maybe even just beat him 2-0. I think that's what you do there. Coffey is great. He's dry to a certain degree, but he's worked 40-minute matches with Pete Dunne that are lovely. I am way, way out of the loop on NXT UK. I didn't miss it for like the first 2 years, but I've missed it almost every week since, which is too bad. Anyway, there were two other matches on this show. First of all, Lash Legend accosts Malik Blade and starts talking about herself. And then poor Idris Inofe walks by, and she continues to talk about herself. Finally, Inofe tries to shut her up later by talking, getting in a word. And she gets very mad about this. She's very upset about it. Pretty Deadly shows up. They take her side, and they say, well, luckily we can shut these guys up in a match after this. They do have a match in 4:36. Pretty Deadly wins. I mean, there was some wrestling here. There was a lot of moving parts. The Redneck Trio showed up to kind of try to provide a distraction. Despite that, the heels beat the dastardly overnumbered baby faces they did dope finisher. Spilled Milk. Yes. Thank you. That's a great name. And they beat Inofe and Blade. And
I feel like that's definitely a name you should remember, Spooky Milk.
It is. I love it. I love it to death. And I like them. But I can't remember who's who week to week. I need more warning that they're going to be on so I can do like 5 minutes of just being like, okay, blonde guy Prince, black-haired guy Carson. I think I've got it now. Wilson. I might have said Kit Carson in my thing. I may have. I think there's a really good chance I said Carson in my recap.
We'll find right out. Now.
Kit Carson's a person, isn't it? I think Kit Carson might be a different person.
You wrote Wilson in the match title, but then in your recap you put Prince fought off Blade and Carson for your second sentence.
Oh, the mama.
The recap, Carson.
I'm almost positive that Kit Carson is a real person that I know of. Maybe a VJ? I don't remember. Okay.
Kit Carson. December 24th, 1809 to May 23rd, 1868 was an American frontiersman. He was a fur trapper, wilderness guide, Indian agent. Anyway, yeah. So
but maybe
Carson.
Also an MTV VJ. I don't know, guys. I don't know what's going on with me. Yes, Pretty Deadly win this. And then Fallon Henley was checking on her boys, and she got attacked by Lash Legend. And so that'll be something to look to as well. And are we going mixed tag? I think it's possible. But 4:36, Pretty Deadly over Inofe and Blade. The other match was Ariana Grace defeating Thea Hale in 3:48. We got a very, very excitable Thea Hale getting this match in a scene earlier with Andre Chase and Ariana Grace, who had been hit in the face by a football. It's all very silly, but wrestling can be. And I thought the match had some stuff to be happy about. Like, Ariana Grace is green, and some of it was slow, and not all of it was super smooth, and she will get better. Thea, I liked, and the crowd really liked. I mean, they were really, really in her corner. They're about her. So if she can pull back to be a little more realistic, and she doesn't have to be a lot more realistic. It is wrestling. But pull it back just a tiny bit to find the right level of this. I think she really has a high potential. I think she has more potential than so far I seem to think they think, if that makes sense. There's got to be a less terrible way to say that, but that's the way I said it. So those are your other two matches, Nate.
So with I kind of almost disagree that I want to see her pull this gimmick back. And by her, I mean Thea Hale. At least for right now, and hear me out, because like I am 100% on board the Thea Hale train. I love the gimmick. I really love the gimmick. I think the charisma is over the moon, off the charts, and she's killing it. I think that's also resonating with the crowd. I don't think she should pull it back just yet. I think she should start pulling it back when she needs to be serious. When she gets in her first big feud with whoever it is, whether it's for a title or not, but when it's like her first big feud and she needs to get serious, then she starts toning it back a little bit. If she does tone it back now, I'd say maybe like a half a notch, but I say keep rolling with it. I love seeing the energy on the screen. She has a presence about her. And I think with some more work in the ring, I think she's got a lot of potential to actually be a star in this business. I don't say that lightly. The match itself, it was certainly a passable match. Like for what it was, you had two people in the ring that did not have a whole hell of a lot of experience. So, they went out there, they put on a good match. It kind of looked like two people that didn't have a whole heck of a lot of experience in a match, but it was like on the better side of that, if you know what I mean. There wasn't anything that really, really stood out to me that was like, okay, that's bad. I feel like for what they were asked to go out to do tonight, they went out there and they killed it. I'm all for it. Ariana Grace, she definitely does need a little bit more work in the ring as well. And her acting ability too, but I think that's also going to come with time. So yeah, I'm not going to be down on that or anything like that. We'll certainly see more of her as time goes on. As I said earlier tonight, we're starting to see a lot of these women get a little bit more time and have their characters fleshed out a bit more. So, we'll kind of see what happens with her as time goes on. But I think right now both of them are in a good spot. The Hale, obviously, in a better spot than Ariana Grace. But you're really, really looking forward to seeing what Thea Hale does. I mean, she's 18, 19 years old, that's insane. She's got so much time and room to grow in this business as long as she stays healthy. So really, really curious to see and excited to see what she brings to the table going forward. Because like I said, right now I'm really high on her. The other match was, I forget at this point.
Faye and Blade versus Pretty Deadly.
Yes, it was. Okay. So, yeah, this one, I don't have a whole heck of a lot to say on this. Like you said, there's a lot of moving parts to it. I really feel like the whole thing was just to kind of further the feud with Pretty Deadly and Briggs and Jensen. Every time I go to say their name, I screw it up somehow.
Briggs and Jigs and Jugs and Hugs.
I can't believe you would put such disrespect on their names by forgetting them.
Kelly would never do that.
Yeah.
Never in his report.
No.
Just like with Kit Carson.
Kit Carson.
Briggs Jensen.
This is my lowest point.
Oh man. But yeah, I feel like it was just kind of, kind of something to really further the feud with them, with those two teams, not necessarily with Blade and Ofe. They were kind of just like fodder, but at the same time, it still gave them TV time and gave some time to shine. So, totally fine with that. As far as like it turning into a six man, with adding the two women on either side, two women obviously being Lash Legend and Tatum Paxley, for it.
Fallon Henley?
Yeah, Fallon Henley. That's exactly who I meant. I said Tatum Paxley, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
It's not like they don't sound similar. Come on. Plus, you know what? Actually, I was just really trying to make Kelly feel better.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah, exactly what it was.
I'm going to need you to call everyone Dante Chen.
Yeah, so Dante Chen and Dante Chen. I could certainly see them going to a six-man tag or six-person tag, I guess I should say, if it is 2022 after all. I just don't know if, I'm for it. I'm not for it, but I think I'd almost rather see Pretty Deadly versus Briggs and Jensen in a match for the UK titles. I'm sure that's probably where it's going to wind up. Maybe they're taking a little bit of time to get there. So, whatever. But it's not like I'm clamoring to see that match either. So I like watching Pretty Deadly. Briggs and Jensen, they're winning me over, but it's not like I necessarily want to I'm not going to go out of my way to watch Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs match. So, is what it is there. So, those are the two matches.
Okay. Bruce.
So on Inofe Blade, the RPG sword and Pretty Deadly, Kit Carson looked good
Final
in
Fantasy.
The ring. Yeah. Kit Carson in the ring was a really good smack job tonight. Just very well done, along with Elton King, not Prince. I'm sorry, Kelly. I just want to keep making fun of you for pretty Kit Carson here.
For just a second, I was like, no, it can't be.
Prince, right? I'm glad I could make that go through your head at this point. That's a win for myself. One thing for me is Pretty Deadly. I know they're good. I know they're great. They know their act. They're perfect with what they do. I'm surprised they're still on NXT, honestly. They seem ready-made to be on Raw and SmackDown, even without a Vince McMahon-led show. For me, I always just watch Inofe and Blade. So earlier in the night, I noted that Malik Blade has joined Rich Fan in the Burgundy Vest Army. Travis Bryant likes to always make fun of Rich for being a little more traditional with his as Travis likes to say, more prudish with his views. So Malik Blade is out there looking like he's a caddy for a golfer or something. And then you have Inofe out there who just looks like a literal, Apollo Crews had the Nigerian prince gimmick. Inofe's out there looking like a literal prince with his flowing robe and his glasses. And just everything about him to me screams all the stuff we were saying about Montez Ford not too long ago on NXT. So I watched them. They keep improving. I'm much higher on Inofe, obviously, than Blade. I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. I do think it's kind of funny how Malik Blade comes out wearing only the burgundy vest with his tights, but that's a different story. So I would just encourage the viewers and the listeners for us right now to keep paying attention to Inofe and Blade. It's obvious to me that also in the backstage segments and in promos that Inofe is much more comfortable than Blade is when it comes to these segments. And so I think there is a much quicker path for him to stardom than or for single stardom at least, and for Malik Blade. But that's not to say that Malik Blade is a lost cause. Now, when you're talking about Thea Hale and Ariana Grace, I should say, we've talked about before, it's much better to have someone who you have to tell to pull back than you have to try to bring up. So she has that working for her. She seemed very much enthusiastic about the product, about learning, about being a wrestler. And I do think it was a bit weird that she hyped up her first match so much and that hyped it up so much, only for her to lose so emphatically. But then that does, go with her inexperience and her youth and kind of how they're building her character. Ariana Grace, Not much I can say about her other than I do like her modified Wasteland finisher. And as I was typing and hitting tweet on my comment about he just became Wade Barrett's favorite wrestler with that, he said that out loud on the broadcast. He seemed surprised that she landed the Wasteland and added a little bit of extra snap to it. So that is good for her that she has a defined and believable finisher that she can work now kind of backwards from as she improves moving forward.
Okay, we got a lot of backstage stuff to get to, and we don't have to get to all of it, which is why I'm going to say it all at once and see what's worth cherry picking.
And we did get another email, too, by the way, if you haven't checked the mailbag.
I've seen two.
Okay, Brian sent one, and I don't know if you saw it or not.
I've read both of those. And I will read them on
get
the
off
show
his back,
in a minute.
Nate. He's on top of it.
Good Lord.
Hey, I was just trying to be helpful, asshole.
Wow. Come for the analysis. Stay for the bizarre feud
bizarre
building.
Bizarre banter.
Okay. Carmelo Hayes was talking about his match last week with Nathan Fraser. Fraser's music played. But Giovanni Vinci showed up behind him, and they made a match for next week on Heatwave. We got the special kind of, in the past they would have called this the takeover thing. No, what did they call these things? Prime Target. Hey, JD McDonagh and Bron Breakker. I thought this was extremely well produced. Cameron Grimes and Solo Sikoa. Grimes didn't have a whole lot to say to him. Later on, Grimes left, ran into Joe Gacy and Dyad, and they asked who he was going home to. Valentina Feroce and Yulisa Leon were very sad about their loss last week, and they complained about it to the very helpful Sage Sangha, who said that they remind him of Katana Chance and Caden Carter, and they never gave up either, and now they're champions. The final accord between Santos Escobar and Tony D'Angelo, also extremely well-produced. Real melodramatic stuff, but this week, I don't know. I feel like in the wrong mood, maybe this wouldn't capture me. I thought this was great. Wendy Chu still committing crimes. Assault. She's, you know what? She's Buffalo Bill from The Silence of the Lambs. That's what she did this week, folks.
Pre-planned assault, too. It's felonious at this point.
Yeah. She's a bad, bad person. I can't think of anything Tiffany Stratton has done that is anywhere near as bad as the five worst things that Wendy Chu has done in this feud. Like, literally none come to mind. She's the one who's been bad the entire time has been Wendy Chu. Whatever. Gigi Dolan and JC Jane, they do stuff, folks. They're women about town. Gigi Dolan goes to bars and throws down glasses. Apparently empty bars. She doesn't want to be talked to, which is probably partially correct for somebody who looks like that, who's bothered all the time by losers. JC Jane, she likes music, Led Zeppelin especially, because two of the records she grabbed were Zeppelin records. She likes rock and roll, folks. I don't know why this scene existed, but I thought it was a nice touch, and I thought they did well. Mackenzie, we only saw her once. She has about 7 feet of hair this week. And she was talking with Apollo Crews. Grayson Waller showed up because his gimmick at this point is mostly to interrupt Mackenzie Mitchell. Like, at this point, he's in a feud with her. That's those were the scenes, folks, that we got this week. No need to mention all of them unless you really care about all of them. But, Bruce, anything to glean?
Even though she only appeared once, in my head, the first thing that went through my mind was, I really think that the person that NXT can ill afford to lose the most is Mackenzie Mitchell. And I'm not sure if I'm off base about that, and I'm also not sure if that's a good thing for NXT, that the person I think that's most integral to your show is the backstage interviewer. But she's just really good at her job. And so, you know, I think that I think in hindsight, her absence would be felt more than if just thinking about it now when she's present. So Grayson Waller versus Cruz, that should be another good match. Dare I say, did we get more character development in this Toxic Attraction vignette than we ever had with them in the whole basically year they've been there? Because I don't remember seeing anything or hearing anything like this for them, at least in 2022, if not further back. So I guess good for them there, though. I think there was more of an actual personal connection made with JC Jane than with Gigi Dolin, because it was more tangible than I just like to get to drink at bars and be a rebel. JC had more of a direct kind of connection to something. And the prime target S video was well done, as you would expect. As someone whose mom used to make me get acupuncture in the face because of my allergies, that scene with McDonough getting the acupuncture made me shudder because I hate needles. And I also used to have to get this really long, like 2-inch acupuncture needle that would go into your stomach for digestive purposes. And yeah, I just don't want to see any of that anymore. So that was unexpected and also not what I wanted to see.
Hold up. You said in your face?
Yep. Through my, like, you know how he had them along the forehead and like in the nasal passages and along the lip line and stuff? Yep, that's what I had to do. And I freaking hated it so much. It hurt, and I hate needles. You couldn't move, and you had to just lay still for 10, 20, I remember how many minutes, but it wasn't fun. So kudos to him for at least sitting through however long they needed him to sit through, and maybe they were gimmicks, so it wasn't even in his face. But that made me shudder, and I guess really reinforced what they were trying to get through on his side with the vignette about him being this person who really just focuses everything into training his body in various ways that are both traditional and non-traditional, which is why he has such an intricate understanding of the human body. I don't think he's going to be the one to beat Breaker, but I wouldn't be surprised if he does win. I'm just not very interested in the match.
Nate?
All right. So, with McDonough and with Breaker, it's weird. I'm not very interested in the match either, and it's I don't know. You know, I talked about it a little bit last week. You know, I thought it was so strange to me that they put the segment with McDonough and Breaker on at the halfway or three quarters of the way through the first hour. It was just like a random spot. It's not a money spot. It just seemed weird and unimportant, and it was just like thrown on the show. And that's kind of how I feel about Bron Breakker and the NXT title right now. And I guess JD McDonough too, by extension, because if I'm not actively thinking about the NXT like championship, when I'm thinking about NXT, like I'm not thinking about Breakker. I'm not thinking about the NXT championship, you know? I'm thinking about what's going on in the women's division or stuff that's going on with like, Nikita Lyons or Lash Legend or something like that, because they've been names that like I've been kind of keeping an eye on and tracking and stuff like that. Bron Breakker is like so far out of my head. He hasn't been featured a whole heck of a lot on TV lately. He has, don't get me wrong. He certainly has, but it's like, he's only on for a handful of minutes here and there. So it's like you blink and you miss him. Excuse me one second. I thought that was a little weird last week, and it kind of plays into my feeling with JD McDonagh and Bron Breakker going into this week and coming into next week for Heatwave. It's probably going to be, I don't know if it's going to be the main event. I feel like the women's stuff will probably be the main event, but you know, it's probably going to be like mid-card main event, or maybe even mid-show main event, or even the opener. And I'm not excited about it. I don't feel like they've done a super great job building up for this. What they have done, especially with McDonough, I have enjoyed, I have liked. I did actually like, a couple of weeks ago when he was outside the ring, going around to the different audience members and things like that. It was different. I kind of feel like it played into his character really well. It was kind of just like a little creepy, a little weird, but, like I said, it's also unorthodox. You don't expect a wrestler to do that. It just seemed different, and I'm sure it kind of gave a cool vibe in the building as well. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with McDonough and with Breaker. The vignette was really well done. I will give them that. As we're really all of the vignettes tonight. The Toxic Attraction vignette, you guys pretty much covered it. It was really well done, but yeah, I don't really have any more to say on that. Wendy Chu, Tiffany Stratton, Kelly, I'm right there with you. I can't figure out like why Wendy Chu is like this pissed off at Tiffany Stratton. I mean, it just doesn't, it's not like the things that she's doing the things that Tiffany Stratton has done is warranted, like, you know, assault and all this stuff. You know, we saw some shades of this last week with, it was a quick backstage little segment where Wendy Chu, you know, looked like she was starting to break bad a little bit there. But tonight it, when she flipped down the night vision goggles, I went from, okay, she's breaking bad to, oh my God, she's Kevin McAllister. Like that's where my mind went. I feel like she's almost just like the kid from Home Alone trying to either booby trap things or, you know, hurt people in creative ways, using things lying around. I guess night vision goggles aren't lying around, but still, that was still the vibe I got from it.
And she put the goggles on with the light still on.
Yeah, right. I guess so you could see it, but still stupid. The Santos Escobar, Tony D'Angelo vignette was, I thought, fantastic. There was part of me going, why aren't they doing this in the ring? You know, you get a folding table, a couple folding chairs, you're going to drag them out to the middle of a park. You know, a little weird, but whatever. Suspend your disbelief for a little bit. Overall, I thought it was a really great segment. I like the stipulation. If Tony D'Angelo wins, Santos Escobar is gone, and I think that's probably what's going to happen. And this is going to be Santos Escobar's call up the main roster. And if that does happen, it sounds like Legado might be staying back. As part of D'Angelo's faction. So we'll see what happens there, if that is the case after all. But I think the main roster could certainly use Santos Escobar, and I think Santos Escobar would be a fantastic addition, you know, to either roster. So totally on board with that. And the only other thing I wanted to touch on was Sangha, in that Yulisa, was it Valentina Feroz and Yulisa Leon backstage segment there. Sangha, I'm really digging this new Sangha, like this wise man, you know, and obviously he's got a bit of a mean streak to him, as, you know, we've seen a couple times when he gets into the ring, but I kind of dig what's going on with him. He's got this new little gimmick going on here, and it's been entertaining the past few times I've seen it. So, or past couple times, I think he's only really done this a few times so far. So, but yeah, really into that as well. And kind of curious to see, you know, how they move forward with it. I don't think it's really going to take him big places, but I think it's going to do enough to at least get him, you know, in some matches, get him probably more so in backstage segments than matches, but certainly get him some TV time. And, you know, hopefully if things go well, you know, get him some more time. Because I was starting to like what he's doing in the ring.
I will say, I think NXT, well, I guess the decision makers gave themselves an out either way with the Escobar D'Angelo match, because I think they can either have Escobar go by himself or they could bring up, they said that Legado will be free from the family. And so free from the family could also mean free from NXT. And I think that they could have the three men be, you know, the faction and have Electra Lopez pay a manager, or with what they're doing now, they're squash matches again, and they're doing it with Omos, and they did it with Nia Jax before. They could have her win squash matches for several months on TV to help build up some confidence and some ring time and experience, and then make her into another Nia Jax role or something similar. So either way, they give themselves a believable and easy out to where the decision they make shouldn't really harm the product or the wrestlers in any way.
Okay, let's go to some emails.
I should open up my emails, guys. That's what I should do. Yeah, this one's from JB. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. Do you guys think that Dom Mysterio should spend a year or two in NXT to refine his in-ring ability and establish a character? I personally think he could really use a run at the PC and touring the Coconut Loop. What would Dom's ceiling be in NXT, and what other current main roster wrestlers could use a short or even long spell in NXT? As always, love the show, and go VIP. Nate, what do you think?
We get asked this question quite often, if Dom should come down to NXT, and my answer is always yes. I really think he should. Not that he's not a good wrestler, but he's not, in my opinion, he's not of the caliber of wrestler you'd see on the main roster if his last name wasn't Mysterio. Well, I guess his last name really is a Mysterio, but you know what I mean? So, you know, it's... Yeah, I feel like it is a little bit nepotism there, whatever. But at the same time, he's been involved in storylines since he was a little kid. So it kind of also makes sense for him to show up here, especially if it's something he wants to do. So I kind of give the nepotism a bit of a pass because he's shown up for a few different angles as a kid, you know, growing up. So I kind of feel like it almost just plays into Rey Mysterio's story, which, you know, obviously naturally brings Dom in. But yeah, he definitely needs some more work in the ring. Like he tries to wrestle like his dad, but he's too thin and lanky. He's too tall and lanky to wrestle like his dad and make it not just look awkward and weird. I want to see him mix his style up a little bit so where he can still incorporate some of the Mysterio stuff, you know, because that's his family's legacy. I don't want to see that getting taken away from him, you know? So he can still incorporate the mysterious stuff, but also find a style of his own that doesn't look so awkward, you know. And I think it would probably help him to kind of win the crowd over and win the fans over as well. Because I mean, all over the internet, you know, I see people, you know, comparing Dominic to like Logan Paul, for example. People are like, Logan Paul, he's not even a great, you know, not even a wrestler. He comes into the company and he's already had better matches than Dominic Mysterio ever would. You know, and I think that might be some hyperbole in some respects, but I kind of, in a way, I almost kind of agree. Logan Paul, like, he killed it. I did not expect to see him come into this company and do what he did. I don't really like Logan Paul. Like, I'm not a huge fan of you know, him and like his brother and things like that. You know, don't watch him on YouTube and whatever. But I got to give credit where credit's due. I mean, he came in and kicked ass. So, you know, I kind of think he might even be almost at a little higher level than Dom from what I've seen. I don't know, but that's just me. I would like to see Dom come down and spend some time in NXT and refine his character and his moveset. And yes, like I said, something doesn't look quite as awkward. As far as somebody from the main roster to come down and spend some time in NXT, I'd have to look at the roster. There's really nobody that like sticks out to me right this second. So I'd say let's go to Bruce. And then if there's anything that comes to mind, I'll bring it up later.
Let's go to Bruce.
All right. So the answer to the Dominic Mysterio question is yes. So to the other question, you know, I just would like to see what this version of Gunther would look like in NXT. Come back. It hasn't been that long, I know, but his character is markedly different from what it was in NXT. His physical shape is much different. And the act itself, Even the in-ring stuff is a bit different from what he was in NXT. So that could be good. In terms of someone else, like a little more not associated with NXT so much, or at least recently, I think as much as I dislike him, it could be good and maybe a little, maybe not now, but maybe once he starts cooling off of it because he's really hot with the fans right now for a little bit. But that's Riddle. I think coming back could be a good kind of refresher for him, both in terms of getting off of Raw and SmackDown and all that stuff, and then coming back to the more contained environment where he kind of started WWE. And I think it would also be good for the show because with his connection with fans right now, I think he would get people more interested in what's going to happen with him on NXT. And we've seen with people like Natalya, Dolph Ziggler, Apollo Crews, that they're people that come down, they're willing to stay there for a program that lasts more than just a week or two. Could be for several months. So in that case, I think it would be good to have Riddle come back maybe toward the end of the year, maybe the last quarter, and just for something there. Maybe help put over, you know, Carmelo Hayes or Braun Breaker, whoever's going to be. And then, or you know, as much as I hated that journey, it could be sort of a callback to MSK, and he helps put Wesley over. So I think there's a lot of reasons to have, or a lot of at least avenues to have Riddle come back and for it to make sense.
This other email comes from Brian Alston. Hello, friends. Last week, well, every week, Nate thinks that all three members of Toxic Attraction should go to Raw or SmackDown as soon as possible. Sidebar, I would rather have seen Gigi Dolin and JC Jane in the Women's Tag Team Tournament than Nikita Lyons and Zoe Stark. So would I, but I think that this is storyline-based. However, I disagree with Nate. I think PA should wait a few months. The reason why is Bayley, Io Sky, and Dakota Kai are together on Raw, and we need more spacing between women's groups. Remember in November 2017 on Raw, Mandy Rose, Paige, and Sonya Deville debuted as Absolution. Then later that week, Ruby Riott, Liv Morgan, and Sarah Logan debuted on SmackDown as the Riott Squad. The internet wrestling community complained for weeks that WWE should not have started two groups at the same time, and they were getting confused on who was on which team. The IWC should not be making booking decisions, but I think there should be some breathing room before Toxic Attraction comes up. Don't forget to listen to Torch VIP exclusive podcast, NXT 8 years back this Saturday, where Kelly and Tom Staupe discuss Bayley versus Sasha Banks. They also talk movie trivia. This week is about a New York cop who is a devoted husband and loving father. Thanks, Brian Alston. I agree that new groups need a moment to be taken in. We've already had way more time than between Absolution and the Riott Squad, which is helpful. And we also have the other bonus we have here is that Toxic Attraction was very much, they're an existing entity. Like, people don't have to wrap their head around what this new faction is because they've already been a faction for like a year and a half. Or a little over a year, whatever. I don't think that this one is as egregious. I also think SmackDown needs to be injected with something for the women, because this last week during that 7-woman gauntlet, they really, really exposed how little they think of much of that division, because 6 different women lost in matches that were under 4 minutes long. So if they wanted to feature the women's division, they went a long way toward making it worse, toward running backwards because of how they came off. And gauntlet matches can be awesome, but if they're not given time, it really just makes the entire division look like they're jobbers, which is the main downside of them, and why the ones that are done right, like the one that Kofi Kingston ran through.
And the New Day.
Yes. Oh, mama. Those are money. I just love them when they're done right. So I guess that's how I feel about that. Brian, Bruce. Brian asked me the question. Bruce. Go ahead.
So I could counter Brian's example by saying they didn't have an issue with Team Bad and whatever the other teams were when Sasha, Charlotte, and Becky made their debuts.
The submission sorority?
Whatever they called themselves. I don't remember. Sure. So I don't think it's necessarily a matter. And I also think that we tend to have these conversations more when it comes to women's groups because, God forbid, you can only have one women's group or one women's act or one women's match a show, Tony Khan. So we can kind of pull back a little bit because there's space in the writing, especially if they go to Raw. I mean, 3 hours, there's space for them to be making a presence on the show, regardless of there being another women's faction or not, even one that just debuted. And to Kelly's point, Toxic Attraction has been a thing for a while. The other positive is that I guess they're calling themselves Control now, Bayley, Io Sky, and Dakota Kai. Those are three big names and personalities that a lot of fans are already aware of and know that they're together. And so and they've done a good job since SummerSlam to reiterate just how close these three are to each other and what their ultimate goals are. So I don't think there's an issue there. Let's see. What was I going to say about Toxic Attraction that I just forgot about? Well, I did say earlier I would have rather had seen them in the tournament as well. I didn't think about the storyline, but after the backstage, the locker room segment between Lyons and Stark, I can see exactly how that could lead to the first feud with Stark as champion. Go. And Mandy Rose is also I guess known enough name to Raw and SmackDown audiences that having them come in with her at the helm would give them some legitimacy, just like having, not as much as Bayley, but in a similar light to having Bayley give some legitimacy to Kai and Sky by being the leader of their faction. So I think I can understand where the concerns are coming from, but I also think that in this instance that they're a bit misguided.
Nate?
Well, first of all, Brian, you know you're not allowed to disagree with me, right? No, you totally are. You totally are. Anybody's allowed to disagree with me. They just know they're wrong. So I basically echo everything that you guys just said. There's one kind of point wasn't brought up, so I'll just bring it up. I feel like right now you could also get away with bringing up multiple factions in a row. Yeah, so even if like, you know, to Brian's point with, you know, the Riot Squad, and then there was what the heck was it?
Absolution.
Thank you. You know, we saw the two of them debut at the same time. That was probably a little bit too quick. I agree, because like it just seemed like, oh, we just have two women's factions debuting back to back, three women in each. They kind of feel, they almost have a similar feel to them. You know, they were very similar. So I can certainly see that being kind of too quick, but right now Triple H is back in charge. Triple H is making a lot of changes. He's doing a lot of things. He's bringing people back. You know, we got Scarlet Cross, Karrion Kross and Scarlet back, you know, on the main roster in an actual like dominant role, not wearing like bondage and a mask as, I think it was Drew McIntyre said. There's a lot going on. So I feel like you could kind of get away with doing a quick, like hotshot, two different women's groups up the main roster really quick. Because you just kind of chalk it up. Triple H is bringing his guys up, you know, he's shaking it up. He's making sure the rosters are exactly how he wants it, you know? So, that's just kind of another point that I thought of and wanted to throw in there, but don't have too much more to add there. I think you guys brought it up or covered it pretty good.
Okay. I was about to run for the exits, but Nate did point out that while I was not keeping a close eye on the switchboard, we got Sean jumping on, looking to say, hey, so let's do that before we head out. Sean, sorry about that.
I jumped on late. I was watching Snake in the Grass because they market that show to me while I watch NXT, and I like to do what they say, like a good draw.
You know, I kind of got sucked into that before we went live, I'm not going to lie.
I actually did too. I watched some, and I'm like, if I watch another 2 minutes, I'm going to watch another 10 minutes, and this show's never going to get running. So,
well, I actually on the DVR. And I immediately turned to the San Francisco Giants game, so, you know, I'm actually a decent person here.
You tweeted about the game while we were talking. Bruce.
I'll say this. The Giants haven't been a bad team. The Giants haven't been a bad team for a long time, and since I do live in California, I watch them because they're not a bad team. Although I hate them and their fan base, with all my heart and soul.
Oh, they're fans. Ooh, they're fans, I tell you.
Oh,
Bruce, I tell you.
Hey, better than being a Dodgers or Yankees fan or a Red Sox fan or a Twins fan.
Oh, please.
Hey, I'm not much of a Red Sox fan, but that's probably the team I follow the most.
Well,
go White
Sox. You know.
I mean, you know, I live 30 minutes from Fenway. Come on.
And?
So,
say
Triple H is bringing back a lot of stuff, and we got some really heavy hitters that used to be in the cruiserweight division. You guys are talking about Legato, the king of the, you know, emperor of Lucha. You know, I think it'd be great to bring back the cruiserweight title with him. If JD McDonagh doesn't win, I think that's a his vignette is just so cool, man. Bron Breakker just screams out Goldberg, tiny Goldberg. You know, he's not as big a personality as Goldberg.
Gilbert.
And he's not
right,
and he's not quite. He's not quite Scott Steiner either, so we're kind of left with this, well, he's not those guys, but he's cool-ish, you know, but J.D. McDonagh just seems like that's him, you know? I mean, he's just playing his character well.
He is an asshole out of the ring from all accounts, yeah. So.
Do you think that the Cruiserweight Championship might be coming back and that we might be seeing Cruiserweight call-ups?
The best thing I can say is that if the Cruiserweight Championship comes back, then this time it might actually stay because it's always been Vince who killed it off. So that would be, yeah, that would work for me if they know how to promote a weight class. If they don't want to promote a weight class, then they shouldn't do it. But you've got to be able to know how to promote the weight class. They've been doing it extremely successfully in Japan for a very long time. The juniors have their own divisions. They have their own hierarchy. And it's like a whole different set, a whole division that doesn't have to be only used to be jobbed out. Now, in the tag matches at the beginning of these shows, juniors do jobs in those tags to their top heavyweights. But they know they're making money with their top heavyweights. And that makes sense. And that doesn't bother me. If that happens in those, as long as you have a strong division, and you can have both. The bigger question is, where do you put the cruiserweight division? Because if you put it on NXT, then you start using up a lot of space again that was supposed to be used on development, which is now being used on development. So, or do you turn Level Up back into 205, or just start 205.
I think you put it back on Raw. It was on Raw.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly where you put it again, because that's where it did the best. And that's, I know a lot of people changed the channel and stuff, but like they weren't programmed to really, you know, they weren't programmed to give a damn. This time they'd be programmed to give a damn. Like they'll be
the only time
actually
they gave a damn though was when Enzo was champion.
Oh, I know.
But his personality's coming up though. I mean, and that's true.
Yeah.
And I liked Enzo because they did give a damn. But you got personalities, not quite as big as his, but people who are interesting coming up. And Pac, you weren't interesting. I hope you hear this. You just weren't interesting. That's why they didn't give you a damn shirt. I'm sorry. I had to get that off my chest. They didn't give him a damn shirt because he couldn't even do what Enzo did. This job,
I love
ain't,
Neville,
just,
and I
this job ain't just about what you can do in the ring. It's about your mouthpiece, too. And sometimes you could use that to get you some money. It shouldn't have sounded like that. I'm sorry. This is a family show. But, yeah,
it's not really because I have Nate on the show. So, I mean,
yeah.
Not all.
Somebody cursed.
Yo,
somebody cursed earlier.
It's literally always me.
I mean, it's not like
I talk to, and then you do it again.
You know, I do have to learn to rein myself in. It happens during, like, work meetings, too.
Wow. You know what? I'm actually comforted by that. He's not just slumming it here. He's doing this everywhere.
That's right.
This guy's just like Tourette's-ing all over his world.
Yeah, exactly.
We're off the rails.
When aren't we?
I know.
I do that all the time. I'm sorry, guys. I just talked about the cruiserweight division.
Yep.
Well,
yeah, so, I've been talking about Nate swearing. Yeah, I guess that's how it feels.
I just want to let out this giant F-bomb right now.
You got Giovanni
right
Vinci coming up, you know. I just think there's a lot of guys.
Real quick.
Yeah, sorry.
When it comes to the Cruiserweight division thing, So looking at the long term for NXT, I actually think that if they're going to introduce a title, what they should do for the long term purposes of NXT and looking at developmental and building up people is introducing a women's mid-card title. For one, that would even out the titles between both divisions, but also it would, with a lot of the talent, they need someone, a workhorse, someone that has the skills enough to have decent matches to kind of carry them in live televised, you know,
ECW RVD.
They need, like, as much as I hate to say, like, they need a Jay Lethal ROH television champion run kind of thing. They need someone there that can, when the women's championship is not at the forefront, or when the other championships aren't even at the forefront, kind of look at it as a TNT title in AEW. What I would do is I would have a mid-card title that is for the women that is defended specifically and only on NXT TV. What I would do is either have a title match a month or a title match every 2 weeks, kind of a pseudo open challenge where you have, if you're going to do it every 2 weeks, you have in the in between weeks, you have a number one contenders match to set up the title match next week. If you're going to do it every month, then you have a set of matches that builds the number one contenders match. And I think it gives other women a chance to not only be on TV more, but to develop more, especially because in 2.0, the people that are the division that is lacking the most depth in terms of experience and in-ring ability right now is the women's division. So if I was going to introduce a third or another title to NXT, for me, I would go with a mid-card women's title.
Let me jump in there real quick. I would – you're 100% right, and I've been advocating for that because I don't understand why – if you do that, then you got a champion that could immediately be – you know, because usually when you lose a championship, you're on your way to another championship. And so, but that means you've been being groomed this entire time. I say defend it, or maybe not defend it, but have a match every week on one of the shows. Because just like the tag titles, they let the tag titles go between shows. I would have it specifically be a television title so that you could defend it on whatever show you want it. And then that champion can kind of pick, and you can kind of pick storylines with different people. They're all going for that title, and that champion's kind of moving around at all times, and then you're trying to catch up with them. I like the chase. And then that way you can explain why Akora Jade might want to show up for the television championship on SmackDown. You can explain a run-in so that it's not just, oh, who the hell is this and why? And that person doesn't necessarily always have to be on your show. I just think to give them a common goal to where you could say, hey, I'll be here next week, or I'll be there next week, or I'll see you here, see you around.
All right. Are we at the end? Have we reached it? We've gone on plenty of sidebars. I think we covered it, though.
While we're here, I figure we may... No, I'm just kidding. I just want
to... You are such a butt. I like the big picture stuff now because it's like, it's so much bigger. It's really fun to talk about this stuff again. I did the post show on SmackDown, and it's just everything. You're looking at everything with a new lens again.
Show for Dynamite last Wednesday, and it even bled into that discussion.
That sounds very like Twitter. You talk about one company, and all of a sudden you're talking about the other one. It's like, I didn't bring them up. That is going to be natural for quite a while. It's a brave new world. I've never in my life gotten to talk about anyone but Vincent Kennedy McMahon running this company. So that is exciting. So I'm Killer Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. Nate, who are you?
The muted one. I'm at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. You can, you can follow me there. And I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out if you'd like to do it. So please do it. I spend time writing them, not for them to just sit there. Read them.
Bruce.
The muted one. Nate just found out his new character name for Dungeons & Dragons. So, I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253, and I will be doing the live report next week for Heatwave.
Okie doke. And that is our show. We will see you in 7, folks. Cheers.